Okay, welcome back. Hope you had a good day today. And let's hold good thoughts for all of those people in New Orleans, the greater New Orleans area. Not a good time. And when you read stories about how President Bush apparently has... let me read this little bit to you, so in case you missed it, you can understand. Well, interesting. That site is now blocked. Anyway, the headline is Bush cuts the flood control budget by 44% to pay for defense contracts and so forth. So as we continue to watch the administration and the government eviscerate the home front, these kinds of things in the magnitude of which they have occurred can continue to be, unfortunately, in our future. We're cutting back everywhere where in reality we should be putting all that money at home here, rebuilding the infrastructure, taking care of our people, and all the rest of things that come with responsible government, but it's not happening. Joining us tonight is a young man who has written some remarkable articles, and you can find many of them at Rents.com. Just do a search under his name, Leland Lehrman, L-E-L-A-N-D-L-E-H-R-M-A-N. There are some really outstanding pieces at Rents.com and elsewhere on the internet as well. He has impressed a lot of people, including John Kaminsky, whose recent article, Who's Wagging Whom, mentioned Leland Lehrman. He has, again, several others out there. Most recently, one I ran entitled ADL Zionist Policies Causing Rise in Anti-Jewish Sentiment by Leland Lehrman. Happy to run that. It raised a lot of very provocative and very important issues for all of us to think about. Leland, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Jeff.
My pleasure. Tell us about your background.
Well, I am of Russian Jewish extraction on my father's side, and on my mother's side, I am Celtic and Northern European.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my other background is as I was trained... early on under my father, who's a well-known Republican politician and businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trained in the Republican point of view. And, you know, as
trained or brainwashed?
Well, you know, it was a little bit of both. And, and you know, my relationship with my father has gone back and forth. But right now, it's very cordial. And the reason why I say this is because... like many of the things that we'll discuss tonight, people have there's a lot of room in people's lives to make major changes, and both myself and my father have made major changes.
Mm-hmm.
With respect to a lot of our beliefs and our political beliefs. In particular, my family was, as most political families are, constantly involved in discussions about politics, and over time, I began to stray from the Republican cause and ultimately becoming very liberal, then only to find that the sort of liberal socialist ideology was also a favorite, apparently, of the industrialists, because in a state-run economy,
mm-hmm.
They control absolutely everything. So I realized that there was this dichotomy happening. You had a sort of a right and left where the opposites were controlled, and they essentially kept swallowing the middle. And I recently saw a movie about the Spanish Civil War where that's exactly what happened. You had a Republican form of government.
Yeah.
Then you had Francisco Franco on one side, and on the other side you had the communists. And as a result of the war between the two sides, the entire thing sort of collapsed into chaos.
Right.
And over time, I learned that this was actually a tried and true methodology. That this was the problem, reaction, solution, control, the opposition position that has actually been very well elucidated in those most controversial of protocols, which are the real reason for my having requested an interview with you tonight.
The Protocols of Zion. One of the most forbidden of all subjects.
The most forbidden.
Yeah, probably. We've never shied away from discussing that here over the years, and it has caused, as you would imagine, a lot of duress, shall we say, aimed at me and my program and what else I do. I'm one of those old-fashioned people, I think very much like you, who believes that everything should and could be discussed under the right circumstances. And if you do it honestly, openly, and with a true analytical mind, there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, just as the founders enshrined the First Amendment as, you know, including freedom of speech, I think that that shows just how fundamental it really is to a legitimate government and decent society.
We either have it or we don't. We either have freedom of speech or we don't.
Yeah, I know.
It's not like being partially pregnant. It doesn't work. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah, and I can understand, you know, where people would, you know, object to certain opinions or disagree, but when just the very broaching of the topic becomes completely anathema, then you know to question what is really behind what is often a very hyperactive and hyper self-righteous point of view, whether
exactly.
it be regarding the Protocols of Zion or whether it be regarding Christian fundamentalism or regarding any very strongly held but not necessarily very friendly to all point of view, which is
right.
generally what we find is that unfriendly points of view are frequently the ones that are most off-limits to discussion.
Well, and you mentioned the word anathema, but I'd go beyond that. They're actually becoming illegal against the law. Look at Ernst Zundel as an example.
Yeah,
you're just not allowed to talk about certain things
right.
in certain countries, or you're going to end up in prison.
Yeah, it's completely crazy. And now, of course,
beyond belief. It's totally crazy.
The state of Israel has now declared that it's going to extradite all of anybody around the world if they can get a treaty with that country, and they'll do everything they can, I'm sure, who would dare to deny that less than 6 million Jews perished during World War II. And that, you know, that brings us back around to one of the reasons why I got involved in this topic. As a youth, for whatever reason, I was fascinated with World War II. I was fascinated partially because of the horrifying aspect of it, and I was always, you know, a big sort of fan of the Allies and demonized the Nazis along with everybody. And, of course, you know, the Nazis do represent one of the worst aspects of human nature. But, that whole point of view stayed with me for a long time, and it wasn't until I met a particularly intelligent and well-versed man here in Santa Fe, and we began discussing 9/11, that he began offering me a whole new window into history. And that window includes the unfortunate possibility that we have to be very clear about this because people get the most paranoid. It's
right. Well, you're defining it perfectly. Go right ahead.
It's a very small sect of, quite frankly, in my opinion, Lucifer worshippers who have somehow managed to infiltrate the Jewish religion through some of their doctrines, specifically those in the Zohar, which is the core of Kabbalism, and the Talmud. And it appears to have happened as a result of the very close proximity and the very close evolving ideological similarity between the high priests of Judaism and the high priests of Babylon. And as we know, my understanding is that fractionated banking actually originated in Babylon and or Sumeria and was subsequently distributed throughout the world by members of this particular sect of Judaism, along with, I believe, other folks like the Knights Templar, which
mm-hmm.
which brings me to a major point that I would like to say today. The Freemasonry, and the top level of Talmudic and Kabbalistic Judaism all join at the top, it appears, in this sort of New World Order ideology, and they share they share some of the same symbols. They share, for example, the six-pointed star, the Star of David, its original name is the Seal of Solomon. Solomon having been, from some points of view, an apostasy. He wasn't really entirely, this is not, you know, from my point of view, this is not problematic, but he wasn't entirely committed to Jewish monotheism. And some of these symbols, like the Star of David and the eye on the pyramid, mm-hmm. They have nothing to do with Judaism, and they really have nothing to do with anything other than a priest cult that is affiliated with monetary control.
And if I might interrupt, so we don't skip over any of these important points too quickly, he's talking about fractional banking, folks, and I think many of you know what fractional banking is. Now, Leland, we have a break here, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit just briefly about what fractional banking is. Now, you've been able to trace it back to your relative satisfaction all the way back to the beginning when this Luciferian supremacist sect began to assert itself and actually created fractional banking.
Several millennia BC.
It's incredible. All right. Stand by. And fractional banking, of course, is what is the primary motor driving the enslavement of countless hundreds of millions of people.
That's correct.
All right. Stand by. We'll be right back with Leland Lehrman in just a minute. Okay, and we're back with Leland Lehrman talking about fractional banking, fractional reserve banking. This, you know, I've gone into banks, Leland, and asked even the managers. They don't know. They don't understand. They truly don't get it, most of them. Some do. They have an idea. So, well, that's okay. That's the way it's done. Bottom line, well, tell us, give us your view, and we'll talk about it a little bit. How does fractional reserve banking work? What are the laws which allow American banks and savings institutions to just so unbelievably gouge the public?
Well, it's a very simple procedure that's been disguised behind a variety of mental and doctrinal errors. The very simple procedure is that banks are legally allowed to lend money that they don't have and collect interest on it.
Don't have and never will have, folks.
And all they really do is get authorization from the Federal Reserve or from the, you know, essentially from the main authority of the land, which is now kind of nebulously spread between the Federal Reserve, Congress, and the
sure
executive
is.
Branch and the judicial. So the Federal Reserve has now actually become, and you know, it was warned, people were warned of this by people like Lewis McFadden.
Who was apparently killed for his efforts.
Yeah, he was, they attempted a poisoning, and then they attempted an assassination with a gun, and then finally I believe they succeeded. But yeah, there were many people who warned us that ultimately, in the event that a private cartel were able to control the nation's money supply, we would lose our representative democracy, our republican form of government, and of course they were right, at least to a certain extent.
Yeah.
The central lie is that it is necessary to distribute currency at interest. The bottom line is that there's no problem, there's no reason why the government couldn't just distribute currency to the citizenry adequate to the needs of that citizenry for the purposes of trade and survival.
Without usury.
Without usury, because now, you know, when I discussed this with my father, who's a very well-known economist, he said that the interest on the debt is what the Federal Reserve, is what it costs the Federal Reserve to actually create a financial system.
Mm-hmm.
But that's ridiculous, because there's no way that it could be a cost $1 trillion to have a functioning currency in America. It's just not. I mean, I don't even know what the national debt is these days. I think it's more than $1 trillion. But
I think it's six.
Yeah. Okay. See, I've seen figures like that. So six. So can you imagine that? You know, this is the price that we have to pay just to have a currency.
Yeah. Now let me get back to one thing. Look, to keep it real simple, folks, your neighborhood friendly bank, whether it's an individual hometown bank or part of a chain, uses fractional banking to make loans. And the laws, as I understand them currently, are formatted dictate that the bank has to only have $1 on deposit for every $10 it can loan out.
Between 10 and 20.
That's right. Minimum 10. It's loaning out money that doesn't exist. It'll never exist. It's all paper. They have $1 on account. Let's take the maximum. They can loan out 20 bucks for every $1 they take in. You get the picture here?
It's like a legalized scam.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah, and again, most people do not have a clue. Not a clue.
Yeah.
So they take in a $1,000 deposit. Gee, they can loan out 10 grand to Mr. and Mrs. John Doe for 8 or 9%, whatever. And that's how they make their money. And then every time John Doe puts money in, they just go ahead and extrapolate from that.
Yeah, and then, of course, what they do is they compound the interest, too.
Yep.
And then through the system of credit cards, they have actually legitimated much, much higher interest rates, up to 19.
18, 19, sure.
Yeah, so that is how they have generated this gigantic sucking machine, which is effectively an incredibly huge and malignant parasite.
Imprisoning the lives of countless people and their children.
That's right, and they've used the same strategy in third world countries, and as John Perkins revealed in his incredible book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, those who don't agree to accept the loans,
mm-hmm,
are replaced,
yep,
or their countries are invaded in the event that the entire country,
yep,
seeks to refuse.
And guess what they have to, ladies and gentlemen, use as collateral to get these forced loans?
Natural
the loans
resources.
Are forced upon. They have to put up their own natural resources as collateral. You get it? Then they default on the loan. And guess, see, the big, I know some Brazilians, and the big joke in Brazil is not owned by Brazilians. Hasn't been for years. But that's another story. Go ahead, please.
Well, the same can be said for America, because through the process of tightening and loosening the money supply, which is what is called the business cycle, they extend credit and then rapidly pull it back in, and during the process of pulling back the credit, you have what's known as a depression. And during a depression, those who are on the inside have gotten out early, and those whose businesses collapse and lose their homes all end up sacrificing those homes to the banks, who pick them up at huge fractions of their real value.
And they start all over again.
Yeah, and ultimately, this same organization begins to assert a greater and greater control over the United States of America's military, industrial, and real estate markets.
Okay.
So now this particular scam, the gentleman that I referred to earlier was instrumental in bringing this to my attention. It has kind of a life of its own.
All right, let's do that just a minute, Leland. We have a break here. So stay tuned. This is a very important conversation. I hope all of you are listening keenly. And if you're not able to hear it now in full, you'll be able to hear it in the archives. Leland Lehrman is my guest. That's L-E-H-R-M-A-N. If you want to do that search on my website, you'll come up with a number of articles he's written. Brilliant young man. I think he's going to be around for a long time, leading a lot of people into the light with the truth. He's an extraordinary journalist. Be right back. Okay, welcome back. A conversation with Leland Lehrman tonight. All right, let's hear that story about the man who has had such influence in your life recently. I'd like to follow this very closely.
Okay, well, as a result of getting in trouble with the Anti-Defamation League for drawing a parallel between Jewish supremacists of the era of the Protocol of Zion, which is approximately the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century,
okay,
and the current crop of Jewish supremacists represented in America by the neoconservatives and their right-wing Israeli allies, who are responsible for bringing us into war with Iraq and now plotting a new war with Iran.
And these vary, by the way, these same Zionist supremacists have, of course, co-opted the state of Israel. Well, it never had a chance. It was a Zionist plan from the very beginning. All you got to do is read World War II history and understand that the Zionists in Switzerland turned down the rabbis from Germany when they brought a request to them for $2 million to gain safe passage for all Jews out of occupied Europe. It's all written. Jewish scholar Lenny Brenner, Dr. Henry Macko, and others have cited the documents, the quotes. It's all there. So there's your supremacist at its worst. Go ahead.
Yeah, the statements were made that it was necessary for the Jewish people to make major sacrifices in right. order to legitimate their land grab in Palestine.
Right.
And this was very open. You see, religion has this sacrificial aspect to it through all history.
Isn't that bizarre when you think about it, Leland?
Some people actually believe that by sacrificing to a god, you gain favor with that god.
What an ass backward, completely screwed up, corrupted view of life and morality. Jeez.
I couldn't agree more, but for whatever reason, I think that the central problem is the famous deal that was offered to Jesus, and appears to have been offered to many people, which is that Satan offers worldly control if one but serve him. Now, the reason how come that worldly control unfortunately does have some traction is that through serving Satan, you are legitimized to use violence. And, in fact, you are required to use violence.
Yep.
And as a result, peace-loving peoples rarely stand a chance when it comes to dealing with a warrior or sort of satanic culture which believes firmly that through the destruction of other people, they are gaining legitimate access. Now, the people at the top realize that this is actually a deal with the devil. But what they do is they propagandize it as if it were a deal with God.
Yeah.
And this is the central fallacy of most of the world's religions, that somehow God will give you the right to murder, steal from, and criminalize other people because you are somehow either chosen as a race, chosen as a religion, or authorized to buy your subscription to a specific doctrine.
Right.
So the reason why I'm discussing the scam of fractionated reserve banking in the context of Lucifer worship, or worship of, basically submission to a deity which demands human sacrifice, is that this is really not about Judaism. It's not actually about races. It's not even really about religions, unless, of course, you can call Satanism or Lucifer worship a religion. And in my research, which has essentially just begun, I've found that there is kind of like a rat line, which is the famous word used for the distribution of Nazis around the world after the Second World War. But there's kind of like a rat line that extends into a variety of the world's religions, that where kind of Lucifer's hand is kind of reaching down and looking for likely converts or likely assets, and into Judaism, it infiltrates through the Kabbalah and through the Talmud and through the particularly Deuteronomy, Isaiah 60 and 61, and some of the other scriptures in the so-called Jewish canon, which legitimate racist and murderous and warlike behavior. But the same exact thing happens through the ranks of Freemasonry, which also extends into the Christian religion. Freemasonry, up until about the 33rd or the 32nd degree, maintains that it considers Christ to be a very important prophet at a minimum. But once you get, higher than that, the assertion is boldly made, as in Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma, that Lucifer is the one that you are worshiping. And so this is not about Judaism. It's about It's about a specific set of ideas which are legitimating human sacrifice, legitimating theft, and legitimating domination, which have unfortunately corrupted most of the world's religions through this infamous devil's bargain, that if you will serve me, I will give you worldly domination.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unfortunately, my people on my father's side have been terribly, terribly affected by this evil scam. And they have somehow allowed themselves to be sucked into it. Not all of them, of course. But some of them, for some reason, are still supporting the very same people who willingly sacrificed them during World War II in order to achieve their State of Israel. And the record of the State of Israel demonstrates that the leadership of the State of Israel is willing to perpetrate the exact same thing on the Palestinian people, as if the Holocaust never ever happened, as if the lesson of the Holocaust is only for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I finally began looking at this, I said to myself, oh my God, like you mentioned with the Lenny Brenner quote, the reality is that high-level Jewish Illuminists or Lucifer worshippers have most certainly collaborated with the Lucifer worshippers in all the other sects, like Nazism, like high-level Freemasonry. They have most certainly collaborated in the development of this New World Order plan.
Right.
And the reason why the Protocols of Zion is important is because it is a terrifically well-elucidated encapsulation of all of the methods and techniques that are going to that have been used to bring about the New World
and
Order.
And are being used. And, of course, the big argument is waged by those who would try to deflect the reality of what you just stated, that these are, in fact, the techniques being used, is that, they were forged. They're forgeries. They're a hoax. Well, you know, it kind of doesn't matter who wrote them, because this is the blueprint of how the New World Order is implementing its death grip over the rest of us. That's the lesson of the protocols. It's crucial.
It's evidence in a criminal case.
Oh, you bet. Stand by. Be right back in just a minute with Leland Lehrman. Okay, back with you and with Leland Lehrman. Okay, Leland, let's proceed. Very important. Again, the Protocols of Zion, often mired in the argument about hoaxed, they're hoaxed, or they're forgeries. The Tsar's secret police wrote them. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They need to be examined for what they are. And what they are is a geopolitical, social blueprint of world domination, which is being essentially carried out right before our very eyes. So take it for what it's worth, folks. It's an incredible document.
That's right. The Protocols of Zion, which is available just about all over the internet. So there's, I don't know, there must be 5 or 10 or more websites that have it in its complete details. But if you look at the text of the article that I submitted to Rents.com entitled ADL Zionist Policy Causing Rise in Anti-Jewish Sentiment, you'll see three of the most important articles that actually go into reasons for believing the authenticity of the document. Now, as Jeff said, there is, in fact, no reason why one cannot read these this literature if it happens that it's a forgery. You know, And the reason why it's stated to be a forgery is because there may be some interpolations in it. There may be some places where translators have mistranslated it. I mean,
taken liberties, which is what, talk about translating. How many times have they rewritten the Bible?
Exactly, and that's the point I'm trying to make, which is we know that the Bible, most historical documents that have been translated and retranslated, and apparently the originals were French. They were then translated into Russian. From Russian, they were translated back into English. So, all of this will lead, of course, to some speculation regarding the authenticity of each phrase. But if you look at it as a whole, you can see that the very, very unfortunate reality of the Protocols of Zion, and this requires a little bit of context regarding Jewish supremacism over time, but Ivan Fraser, Paquita de Shishmaref, and many other writers have shown that the very unfortunate thing about this is that it does, the Protocols of Zion do fit into a Jewish supremacist wing within the very much maligned and then, of course, totally destroyed religion of Judaism. And it is to the Jewish people that I appeal to look at this and recognize that we must seriously question whether or not our leaders have, in fact, been instrumental in our own destruction. And we must now completely separate ourselves from any leadership which legitimates falsity of doctrine or warlike doctrine for the essence of the Jewish religion, as I understand it, which is the Old Testament. The Ten Commandments. Of all of the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments stand out as a shining example of a very short law, which was, of course, then even shortened further by Jesus to the Golden Rule, which one can live honorably by, and assume that a society that based itself upon those premises would be peaceful, productive, and happy. But this is a bit of a detour. Let's go back and take a look at why the Protocols of Zion actually represent an unfortunately contextually accurate picture of Jewish supremacism. The Talmud, an extremely gigantic body of work, which is known to be the heart and soul of the so-called Jewish religion, and in particular the Eastern European Jewish groups, is split into two variants. One is the Babylonian and the other is the Jerusalem Talmud. But these are gigantic bodies of work. In these bodies of work, the Talmud and its affiliated mystical aspect, which is known as the Zohar, and which is the focus and the center of Kabbalism, we find again and again the repetition of the idea that the Jewish people is superior. Unfortunately, it is often stated that it is okay to steal from anybody who isn't Jewish. Gentile or Goyim are the typical words that are used in the Talmud. And this is the official Sansino translation of the Talmud, so this is not a transliteration problem. We can see direct evidence within the Talmud of racist doctrines being promulgated.
They are, and the word racist is absolutely appropriate. And then, of course, they have everything backed up with the Kol Nidre.
Well, that's right. And the Kol Nidre, as Henry Ford brought to a limited population's attention, unfortunately, does appear to legitimate the making of contracts with prior knowledge that one will not honor those contracts. Henry Ford's quote on that effect was that as a result of the Kol Nidre, anybody who believes that they can trust in the business integrity of somebody who espouses this philosophy of, it's okay if I make this contract because, well,
I'll be forgiven in advance. I don't have to worry about it.
Exactly. And then the other argument about the Protocols of Zion, the other two arguments, one that you mentioned already, and that it was a forgery, and the other argument that is often used to legitimate to legitimate the idea that nobody should ever read it or discuss it or believe in it or have anything to do with it, is that it was one of the documents that Hitler cited as the basis of his anti-Semitic beliefs. Now, this is a very complicated subject right here. The reality is very simple. It doesn't matter what somebody used one document or another in order to legitimate. That has no bearing on whether or not the document is authentic. That would be like saying that because the Crusades were mounted as a result of Christianity, or, as, of course, the interpretation of Christianity promulgated by the political entities of the time, that therefore the Bible is a forgery, which is, of course, ridiculous. But for some reason, the Anti-Defamation League and the people that are harassing me here in New Mexico believe that as a result of the fact that Hitler used the Protocols of Zion, therefore they are off limits. You cannot discuss them. You cannot even... And unfortunately, the Anti-Defamation League also believes, and has shown this, I believe, in some of the laws, the hate speech laws, which it has developed in Canada and other nations around the world, it does not believe, which is also actually in the Military Code of Justice, that truth is a legitimate defense. In other words, it doesn't matter whether or not the protocols are true or not. From their perspective, if they engender what they call anti-Semitism, it is not a topic for polite discussion. Anyway, I respectfully disagree with that point of view, of course, and I think that as a result of the fact that the Protocols of Zion represent and demonstrate that there may in fact be a small group within the body of the Jewish people who believes in this type of a murderous and racist doctrine, that it is essential for us as a Jewish people to self-examine and look and see whether or not it is in fact a sort of parasitic leadership which has brought upon us the problems that we rightfully as well blame on other agencies like Adolf Hitler. And this brings up what is just completely anathema to the Anti-Defamation League, and which is the quote that they use for my radio show that they're most upset about is the fact that I said that it is important for the Jewish people to re-examine the innocence of the Jewish people as a whole with respect to the Holocaust. And, of course, the vast majority of Jewish people have nothing to do with any of this. They're, you know, simply living their lives like the rest of us. But to the extent that any Jewish person places their faith, their conscious, willing faith, in a racist or murderous doctrine, and willingly does this, then they do begin to assume some responsibility.
And well, that goes for any religion.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. And you know, it's the other thing that they keep saying to me is, well, why do you keep bringing up about the Jewish people? Why don't you talk about the fact that, you know, Islamic fundamentalists have problems and Christian fundamentalists have problems?
Yeah, and they sure as hell do.
Well, yeah, there's two reasons. One is that's already been done. In fact, it's been done all over
the newspaper.
Yeah.
All over the media, as it is.
Exactly.
For years, for decades.
That's right. So my point is that in the event that you have what is clearly a supremacist, Jewish supremacist cabal operating within the State Department, within the Defense Department, within the right-wing establishment in the United States of America, within the right-wing establishment of Israel, represented by people like Doug Feith, Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz.
Oh, and by the way, let me suggest, your litany of names is absolutely essential, but I've had Jews on this program for years who wholeheartedly agree with the gist of what you're saying. They are outraged at how they've been manipulated by these Zionist supremacists, and it's getting to be where there is about to be a civil war over there, over this. This is a main part of it. They're tired of being led down the road once again.
Well, yeah, and the idea that somehow Israel is going to come out of a greater war in the Middle East, which would certainly come about in the event of war with Iran, it's totally crazy. Israel is just as likely to become the number one target of most of the Middle Eastern regimes in the event of such a war,
right,
as anybody else is. In fact, they're much more likely.
We don't want war for anybody.
Exactly.
Jews, Muslims, Christians. We've got to stop this, folks. And what we are is citizens of the planet. We've got to get out of these clubs, you know, and stop thinking that we're, because I'm in this club, I'm superior to those in that club. It doesn't work that way. We're all supposedly equal, at least we start out that way. But what happens along the bumpy road in life can be pretty shocking. Okay, we'll be back hearing more of Leonard Lerman's views, and our conversation will continue after the top of the hour news break.